Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're going to introduce you to a composer named Nico Muhly. The Providence-bred phenom is, quite frankly, unlike any composer I've ever met. He arranged part of Paul Simon's last record, worked with Philip Glass, has written two operas, three film scores, a bunch of pop records, a theater score for Broadway Revival, and multiple ballet scores. But don't take my word for it. When I asked Boston Conservatory music director and good friend Eric Hewitt to describe Nico, he said this.
Whoa. Nico is certainly an ecstatic and significant part of music history already. Nico is one of the composers on the planet who has an incredible talent and ability to bring together musical influences from all time and have them cohabitate in interesting, beautiful, and expressive ways.
Put another way, Muhly, as The Guardian declared, is one of the most celebrated and sought-after classical composers of the last decade. Does that sound about right, Nico?
Yes, that's very kind. Thank you for that. That does sound about right.
Hang on here for just a second. How old are you?
I am 35 years
old. You are 35 years old, and Eric Hewitt already says that you're one of the most important musical figures on the planet right now.
Well, we sort of grew up together, so, you know, it's...
But at the same time, I think that notwithstanding our personal relationship, that's true of Nico. I mean, his particular brand of sound, his sort of iconic sonic signature is extremely specific. You can hear three bars of a piece by Nico and you just know it.
Like in this Muhly composition called Etude No. 3, performed by violist Nadia Sirota. It's one of the pieces at the Boston Conservatory's annual New Music Festival where Muhly is this year's featured composer.
So there's this kinetic activity played by the viola, but underneath it is a really simple, almost chorale tune of music. It's explicitly intense, so it's just this kind of, you know, first species counterpoint thing. It's not unlike something that you would find in early music, where essentially you have this information at one speed combined with its own information four times as fast.
When I listen to this, I see Nadia at a dance party in church.
And I think, you know, and this is another example of, like, I wrote this piece really, really for her. And it's a thing that it's an etude, so it's a study, right? So it's not meant to be something that she's naturally good at. I mean, it takes advantage of the thing that she's naturally good at, but it's also meant to stretch her a little bit. So the game of this thing is this rhythmic displacement where, again, there's this really steady thing sort of downtown, and she's sort of flitting around where the streets get weird.
So you see, that is Nico Muhly. He's the barely restrained embodiment of the intersection where musical streets get weird. There are the avenues of his Juilliard classical music training, meeting up with the streets peopled by Joni Mitchell and other rock music LPs he picked up in garage sales as a kid. But at the heart of Muhly's musical street map, the long, beautiful boulevards of the religious music of his childhood, when he sang with the Providence Church Boys Choir. You hear it in this piece, Bright Mass with Canons.
So in this particular case, this piece of music was designed for use in church. So in this Agnus Dei, what I was doing is setting up a structure whereby the left side of the choir and the right side of the choir are doing the same material, just displaced. So you have the same material kind of spatially divided. And the reason for that is because when this the Agnus Dei would be sung is when people are milling up to the high altar to take communion. So what happens is that you've been in the main part of the church, and then you walk through this kind of spatial thing. Uh-huh. And for me, that's a very visceral memory of being a chorister in Providence, Rhode Island, where, you know, we sang all this Renaissance music. And I feel like once that music gets in your body at a certain age, you can never escape it. And so I've always tried to sort of send myself these little like love notes to the pieces that I loved when I was 11 years old or 12 years old. So that's what this is.
Again, Boston Conservatory music director Eric Hewitt.
Nico is at once like a fourth-generation minimalist composer, sort of. He's also invented, in a way, a thing that I like to call neo-Renaissance music. And we've had neoclassical music and we've had neo-Baroque music, but Nico has this particular love for that older, specific kind of music from the 14th, 15th, 16th century that has this flavor.
So I'm still taken by something Eric said earlier about how, Nico, you bring together this music from, let's say, the 15th century and modern minimalism, and you make it work. I mean, was that sort of an evolution in you that brought those two together, or was it just something like you're like, why not?
Let me rephrase it, because I think, you know, one of the frustrating ways about which music is spoken is this idea of styles existing in their own sort of pens, right? Number one, that I find that frustrating. Number two, I mean, for me, it's this idea of a practical emotional relationship to the music that you love. And so, for instance, I don't see any reason why two things can't exist in the same space. And I always think about it in terms of food, actually. I think is a good analogy, where, you know, if you're from Italy but you live in America, you know, the dumb question to ask such a person is, do you call it Italian food or you just call it food? And of course, what you're doing is you're taking your visceral memories of childhood and you're applying it to your life in, you know, Billerica or whatever. So, and it's not fusion, right? It's not like a little like one single baked ziti with like a parsley foam, you know, it's one zito. You're just feeding your family, right? You're making food for nourishment, and you're making food that tells the story of what you love. So for me, you know, it's Anglican church music from the 16th century, and it's that kind of playfulness that you find in Orlando Gibbons, and it's the sort of severity of William Byrd's Private Catholicism, blah, 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 combined with the other music that hits me in the kind of downtown place, which is to say the early music of Philip Glass, the early music of Steve Reich. So for me, it's a natural thing to combine.
Why does that early Glass, for example, hit you?
I love music that's fast and slow at the same time. But what's great about certain music is that it feels like that thing of taking a leisurely walk with three crazy dogs running around. And it's like you all get to the same place at the same time, but there's a lot of different kinetic information that's happening.
So, Eric, jump in here, because I am not, by any stretch of the imagination, a music expert. But I imagine, maybe not now, but in generations past, perhaps there were those purists who would say, get rid of the dogs, because I just want to walk.
Well, sure. And as life continues to change and develop around us, so also does the reflection of our human experiences in the art that we make. And so I don't know if it makes much sense here at the beginning of the 20th century to...
21st century.
Thank you. You see where my mind is.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're stuck in...
I am. Well, and
Krennic.
I'm not so sure that it makes sense for us to lower the energy level of the music that we're making if we intend for that music to actually reflect our human experiences, our daily existence. You know, life's gotten complicated here in modernity. And I love to hear music that addresses the emotional content of the things that we experience every day.
I want to give you my honest emotional reaction when I first heard the pieces, because I was just looking at the program. And I was like, okay. And then I listened to the first piece, the Etude, for example, and I was like, yeah.
Good. That's what we want.
Dance party in church.
Dance party in church.
Exactly.
Yeah. Or church party in the club.
Yeah. Church party in the club sounds good.
One of the projects that I'm really interested in, and this is something that I think you sense and that you will sense in the Bright Mass and in other sacred works, is that I have always resisted the sort of prettification of the Old Testament and of the Nativity, because if you actually in there in the scripture, it's terrifying, right? Everything that's going on is absolutely petrifying for everyone in first century Palestine. And you have this sense of it's not, you know, gentle snowfall and it's not a beautiful harp. It's actually like the heavens like rip open and you have a million voices happening all at the same time. To use the sort of etymologically radical definition, it's awesome.
One of the major influences that I personally hear in a lot of Nico's music that we haven't discussed at all yet is Igor Stravinsky.
Yeah.
And I think that if Nico can frustratingly allow me to label him a neo-Renaissance neo-minimalist with a healthy, healthy dosing of like Igor Stravinsky frosting.
Yeah.
You're going to hear that Igor Stravinsky frosting in Step Team that you're about to play.
I wish people could see how you guys are reacting to hearing this.
Well, this is really fun music to listen to, and it's really fun music to play. It echoes these specific works of Stravinsky's. Mm-hmm. To those of us who know that music as classical musicians, these allusions are obvious. And so it's sort of this incredible conversation between Nico and Stravinsky's ghost.
Yeah.
And they're working aesthetic issues out live for your entertainment.
So there's one more question I want to ask you. And
tell
it's
me.
Like the most basic one that I should have started
What are your influences?
No, why do you love music so much?
What a strange question. What else possibly could I love?
Nico wakes in the morning and there's music in his mind and he has to quiet it to make it go away. Otherwise, it comes back. And when you make music and Nico's in the room, he like physically embodies, especially if it's his music, the music that you're making. So, I mean, I don't think Nico loves music. I think Nico is music.
That's very kind. But I mean, because it's like if you've watched Grandma make something, right? Or you know, I'm obsessed with people who do one thing culinarily. And I live in Chinatown in New York, and there's like the dude who just grills chicken gizzards, and then there's the lady who sits in the window and just pinches dumplings all day, and it's amazing, and it's unteachable, and it's about a fluency that we, as I would say, relatively young musicians, we're still working on it, and we'll probably be working on it for a really long time. But that's a way, as you're saying, to sort of be music and be participating in this tradition that can stretch back as long as you want.
Yeah, I mean, Stone Age.
Yes.
So the first grunts and hums.
Right, the first saxophone concerto.
So, okay, I'm not going to give up here. How do you feel? What do you feel when you're composing, when you're creating music? How does it make you feel?
Well, you know, I'll use the food metaphor, which is to say there's a really practically, I would say, meditative thing about, you know, chopping an onion. And then one click further, there's the way it makes your home smell when a chicken is roasting. There's the way that you feel like you're connecting back to grandma when you're dealing with a mirepoix or making a bechamel or making a classic French sauce. There's a way that you feel like you're extending. There's a way that you're dealing with the fact that a vegan is coming over. There's a way that you're, you know, just kind of it feels like the act of benevolent creation, curation, and just having a good time, and also, you know, making your house smell like chicken.
Ha ha ha! Well, Eric Hewitt, it is always so great to talk with you. Thank you so very
much. My great pleasure.
Well, Nico Muhly, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. What a pleasure.
Nico Muhly is a composer of operas, pop music scores, and chamber and classical works. Eric Hewitt is a conductor, composer, and artistic director of the Boston Conservatory's annual New Music Festival. The Conservatory is celebrating Muhly's music with a series of concerts and classes now through this weekend. We've got more information about that at radioboston.org. That's it for today and this week. Have a great weekend. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston. Thank you.